As we get started this morning, I'm going to invite Aidan Goshick up with me here this morning. I'd like to introduce, some of you know Aidan from when he was a student here. He was part of our youth ministry. He graduated from Holdingford High School, and he decided after kind of some wrestling, he did some different things, and Aidan's going to share with us briefly a little bit about that. But Aidan has chosen to go into ministry, and so he went up to Oak Hills Bible College. He spent, how many years were you in Oak Hills?
Three.
3 years in Oak Hills, and you did some, I don't want that, let's take that one. Otherwise, your voice will boom all the more on that mic. Thank you. Anyway, and so you spent 3 years in Oak Hills, but before that you were at Solid Rock over at Lake Beauty Bible Camp. So Aidan has decided to go into ministry. I want him to just share real briefly just kind of what led him to that path, how he got to that point, and the role that you guys had in there. I know some of you have heard the testimony of Aidan before when he was a graduate here, and what you as a congregation invested in him. But then I want to share a little bit about what we're doing with Aidan in regards to an internship. So go ahead, Aidan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Just before I start on that, I just wanted to say thank you so much to the church board, especially in that process of getting me involved. I was pretty stressed out the last 2 weeks of my college career trying to find an internship, and nothing was coming my way. And so finally I was able to get in touch and hear back from the Alliance, and it just opened an incredible door where I'm now working on accreditation, after that hopefully ordination, and all with the Alliance Church. And so it's just been an incredible journey, and I want to say thank you to everybody who had a hand in bringing me on board. So now I'll get into a little bit of just why I'm here. I guess my very simple answer is I just wasn't good at anything else. But let me expand on that just a little bit. So I went to Holdingford High School. My parents were both teachers there. You can see them right there. Hi, Mom and Dad, if you want to wave. See, this is my opportunity to get to talk and they have to listen, so it's just great. Anyways, so I was at Holdingford High School and I just wasn't really plugging in very well. I did sports, I enjoyed different art stuff, but it wasn't something that I was ever passionate about in any of my schooling. But when I got plugged in here, I actually followed my older brother, Caleb. I'm sure most of you know him. Caleb brought me with him, and his friends just kind of became my friends, and I was able to get a taste for ministry. And since then, I was on junior staffing with the Awana group. I was also able to be a small group leader for both the junior high and senior high groups. And so I realized my passion was in ministry. After that, I moved on to Solid Rock, which is a one-year discipleship program at Lake Beauty Bible Camp. It's covenant-affiliated, but it was my first step. And then after that, I went into Oak Hills Christian College, as Ren had mentioned, and that's where I really started going into the youth ministry degree itself, really started doing the grunt work of what that looks like. And so I was able to make a lot of connections with different pastors, and even in the Alliance Church down in Bemidji, Minnesota, where the school is, I found a desire to keep growing and to keep going forward with the Alliance and going forward with my faith. And so faith has always been a bigger part of my story than anything else amongst my friends and family. And I just have been blessed ever since for that. I think that kind of just covers it.
A couple of things. So we have brought Aidan in on as an intern. And so what we've decided to do is we pay him, we scatter peanuts on the floor, and he picks them up and he eats them. It's really, that's how we're paying him. And it's not much more than that, really. There will be an opportunity. I just do want to make this clear. Really what is going on here is Aidan needed an internship. He said, I will come, I will do the work of an intern, and really you guys don't have to pay me anything. And so we said, okay, we won't pay you anything. In a nutshell, that's kind of what happened, but we've made some adjustments to that since then. But I do want to make you aware right now. So this is what his internship's going to look like a little bit. He's working with me and doing some pastoral. He wanted a whole gamut. He wanted to understand all the areas of ministry, including from lead pastor, youth pastor, children's ministry. And already, he's been here for doing this for about a month already, and this is our first opportunity to really be able to get him up here and introduce you to him. But he worked with Joetta with the VBS, so he's getting some of that children's ministry. He's been working really closely with Chris on a number of youth ministry things. He's here regularly helping out on Wednesday nights. And I know you're not here because we don't don't have the Awana program, but you know, youth ministry is still happening. I've assigned him a project towards studying and restructuring a little bit of our Awana program so that we can kind of make some adjustments there. He's doing a great job with all of that. I want you as a congregation to know a little bit of what he's been doing. Also, he's going to have the opportunity to actually preach twice throughout this summer. So I look forward to having you be able to engage in what Aiden has to offer in that regards as well. And as an opportunity, and I'm somewhat serious, we have, as the elder board, we've decided to be able to give him a very, very small stipend that will be paid monthly. But there's going to be an opportunity for the church to kind of engage with Aiden in ministry in this way, too. The first time that he preaches will be July 8th, and that happens to be a communion Sunday. And what we as the board have decided to do is we would like to offer that entire benevolent offering that we would normally take on that given Sunday and offer that as a love gift to Aiden as a way to help supplement that stipend. So I want to make the congregation aware of that. Aiden's been doing really well so far. We fully expect him to continue to just really thrive under the different leadership positions that he's doing. He's very humble, and he was a very diligent worker. So
the most humble.
He's actually the most humble person, and you can ask him. So I want to encourage you, even after the service, get a chance to engage, get to know Aiden a little bit, and for the rest of the weeks coming up here, and just so you understand a little bit what Aiden is doing. Thank you, Aiden.
Thanks.
So as we get started with the rest of the service this morning, I'm just curious, so last week we talked about NASCAR racing, and there were three of you that follow NASCAR racing. I'm curious if there's less people that follow horse racing than NASCAR racing. Does anyone follow horse racing? One. I've got three. Same thing. Okay, that's not bad. So anyway, there's kind of a big deal that happened over this last week in regards to horse racing, and that was the 13th ever. Okay, in like the history, there's like 120, 130 years worth of this Triple Crown events, if you will, but the 13th ever to win the coveted Triple Crown. When the Triple Crown for horse racing would be the Preakness, the Kentucky Derby, and then the Belmont Stakes. And so last Friday or Saturday was the Belmont Stakes, and a horse by the name of Justify won the Triple Crown. It's interesting because it was just like 3 years ago, I think, that American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. Before that, like 37 years had gone by, and there wasn't a horse that could do it, you know? And it says something. It's interesting to know what makes or breaks these types of things. But it got me looking at some of these things. American Pharoah, for instance, last time, you ever get like, man, some of these horse names are very creative. You know, so I started doing some digging, and I found some creative horse names, and apparently these are legitimate. I don't know if they are or not. I cannot verify. I do not own a horse, nor have I ever met a horse that told me his name. But Dewey Cheatham and Howe was apparently the name of one of the racehorses. Don't think he ever won the Triple Crown because I don't really recall the name. How about this one here? Who fainted? It's like, and then you have to kind of envision, you know, the announcers as they're calling these horse races, going, who fainted is in third? Well, it's not probably getting anywhere. And I like this one, in front, and taking up the rear is in front. Unless he's winning, it only makes sense, right? Okay. What about this one? You could get in trouble for this one. Oh, no, it's my mother-in-law coming up on the outside. Okay. You put it in the context, it's like, oofta, right? Yeah. And so, again, apparently these are legitimate horse names. I don't know. This one was interesting. It's not Pot-Oo. It's Poe, eight O's. Poe, eight O's. I know. Apparently, the true story behind this one is the owner of the horse said the name of the horse is Potatoes and went to told this little stable boy to go write it on the sign, and this is what the stable boy wrote. I don't know if it's a true story or not, but that's what he put on there, and they liked it so much that it kind of stuck. Why kick a moo cow? Why kick a moo cow? I suppose because he's not producing milk. I mean. And then finally, odor in the court. Which actually segues nicely into this morning, because not only did Justify win the Triple Crown, and we're going to be talking about this idea of justification, but we have this odor in this court that as we look at these trials that Jesus is about to step into, I'm sorry, there's no other way to put it, they flat out stink. And the idea that we have when it comes to democracy, the ideas that we have when it comes to justice, and we look at what Christ endured in these trials, literally, I'm convinced if you look at what Christ endured in this idea of these stinky trials that he had to kind of deal with, your jaw will literally be on the floor. Because it's just like, how did they get away with this? So let's look a little bit at justice, this idea of justice. We talk a lot about justice. In our cultures now, we have things called social justice, where we want to see things just and sound and right and true. And so here's the official definition of justice, and it says just behavior or treatment. So in other words, this right way of doing things, to do things correctly, to do things justly, to do things righteously. So it says just behavior or treatment. The quality of being fair and reasonable. And so that's what we look at, this idea of justice. We look at this idea of fair. And you know how it is when your kids say, oh, not fair. Your response is simply, you know, the fair comes around once a year and today's not your day. You know, the personification. I like this. And I wanted to try to give us an illustration, but we've seen this picture before, but maybe we haven't really grasped and gotten our mind around really what this is signifying. But this personification of justice, which is usually a blindfolded woman holding scales and the sword. You remember? You've seen these pictures. So you have this woman, she's standing there and she's holding these scales. The scales are those balance things, you know? And she's blindfolded, and then she's got the sword in their other hand. And so, in other words, the idea behind it is real justice, justice as it should be, is blind to these different biases. You know, and so that's why there's the blindfold. And then the scale is to weigh the evidence, in a sense, to weigh the right and the wrong, to weigh the witnesses. And then the sword is only then when you have made this unbiased decision, which honestly, none of us, I don't think, really can do. You know, certainly we appoint people into these roles as judges and justices. We have lawyers and we have laws, and anyone that we put into those positions really doesn't do, no pun intended, justice at the idea of being a justice. You know, and it's just, it's complex, and we deal with the ramifications of it, but the bottom line is we all fall into this idea of bias. And so in this perfect idea, this perfect realm, you'd have this person who can be totally blind to skin color, totally blind to socioeconomic issues, totally blind to even religious aspects, so that they can make these totally right and just decisions. And then the sword, obviously, is only then can you actually administer the consequences of true justice. And then we look at this word justify, the horse's name, as we just talked about briefly moments ago, but this idea of justify. And it basically means to show or to prove to be right or reasonable. In other words, to have a good reason for. So in other words, I justified my actions. I came up with a good reason by which I did what I did. You know, if I'm driving 85 miles an hour on a 35 mile an hour speed zone, it's going to take a lot to justify that, all right? So maybe someone is dying in the car seat, you know, next to me, a young child or whatever. I have to get to the hospital, so I'm going as fast as I can. So I have made, despite the fact that there's this rule, despite the fact that there's this law, I have made a justification, and I have chosen what I feel is right as opposed to what the law says is right. Does that make sense? So that's this idea of justifying. But I love this second part, and this was in the actual definition, because there is a moment when we look at this, this theology aspect of it, and this is exactly what it said, specified the theology, to declare or make righteous in the sight of God. And here's the kicker, is we can't do that. None of us is adequate. None of us is capable of making that kind of a decision to truly justify the idea of a righteous act. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, we look at this idea to declare or make righteous in the sight of God. I can't declare myself or make myself righteous in the sight of God. Only one person can do that, and that's God himself. And it just puts you into this quandrum. You know, it's like, what in the world am I going to do with this idea? You know, what we're going to find here this morning as we look at this, and there's some studies that are done, I'm going to show them to you in a second, but what we're going to find is our culture that we live in regards to the way we view justice and right and wrong, and what we do with it isn't that far removed from what we're going to encounter in these crazy kangaroo court trials that Jesus had to endure. And so here's some statistics. Some studies have been done, and this is what the studies have shown. And these were about a couple of years ago that these numbers came out. So 43% of Americans feel that the American justice system is unfair to most people. All right, so in other words, almost half of Americans feel that the American justice system is unjust, okay? 55%, and this is broad scope here, okay? This is not necessarily localized here. This is broad America. I have no idea what their demographics were when they did this study. These are just the numbers that were reported to me. It was on the internet, so it's got to be true. 55% still believe that our society is fair and decent. Well, that's encouraging. At least over half believe that our society is fair and decent. Still a higher number yet, 58%, still trust a jury's verdict. That's interesting. Still trust a jury's verdict, you know, a jury of their peers, versus the verdict of a judge, a single person. That's interesting, isn't it? And then finally, only 33% believe that most judges follow the law in their ruling. That's a humbling statistic, you know, because when we look at it. But let's be honest. If, okay, and I'm not saying that these are true. This is just what people feel. This is what people believe, all right? So take it with a grain of salt in that sense. However, it gives you this picture as to how we're viewing our justice system as a whole in America. But what's interesting is we look at what we're going to encounter here this morning in regards to what Jesus encountered with these trials. And he faced six trials, and we're going to talk about three of them this morning. He had three trials that he encountered with the Jewish leaders and then three with the Roman officials. And in these trials, what you're going to see is like, this is a joke. It's no wonder, you know, why would you trust that? But yet, you see what they did and what they got away with, and it is literally just jaw-dropping. And then what I want to point out to us is we're really no better. I know I don't want to be a downer here, but there's got a reality here. We got to do a reality check somewhere along the lines here that we're really no better than those Jewish officials were. And I hope to be able to point that out. Not only that we're, oh man, I'm so bad, but there's a bigger picture here that God wants to transform us from what we are to who he wants us to be. And that's what I want you to grasp and take with you this morning. So here's a quote as we get started. So C.S. Lewis makes his quotes. If you don't know who C.S. Lewis was, he's a pretty well-known author, obviously a theologian. But before he became a Christian, he was an atheist. And look at this quote by C.S. Lewis in regards to his conversion and what made him change his stance on Christianity. He says, "My argument against God was the same argument that you hear all over the place in America, all over the place in the world, in fact. His argument was, my argument against God was that the universe seemed so cruel and unjust. In other words, bottom line is this, I don't believe that there can be a God who lets bad things happen to good people, in a nutshell. And I think most of us have probably heard an argument like that somewhere along the lines, right? So C.S. Lewis's big issue was, I cannot believe in Christianity. I cannot believe in a God who lets bad things happen to good people. But then he came to this realization, and you know, to our credit, because he wrote all these things that we can't understand. He wrote some things we can't understand. This is one of the ones I think we can understand that C.S. Lewis wrote. But he said, but how had I got to this idea of just and unjust? So in other words, what he was saying is, I can't handle the injustices in the world. I can't handle all these wrongs happening to good people. But then he came to this realization, where am I getting my standard of right and wrong? Where am I getting this idea, this standard of what is good and what is bad? So that's got to come from somewhere. And so then he says, a man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of what a straight line is. You know? And that's in a sense what he was doing. He says, I'm calling this line crooked, but yet I have no idea what a straight line is. You know, so the Holy Spirit did something in C.S. Lewis to cause him to see these things. And he says, what was I comparing this universe with when I called it unjust? And so I want to start here with a little illustration. My hope is that it's going to carry us through the rest of the time here. So here's what I'm going to need. Isaac, you're going to be helping me. Yep. He's got his name tag on. Come on, stand up. I know it is my name tag. Okay, here's what I need you to do. You see that camera? Okay, it's on you. There, look. Well, that's not on you there quite. This is a different one. All right, you're going to go straight to Joseph there, and then you don't run into him. You got to stop before that, okay? Just take the rope. Hold slow, slow down. Okay, a little quicker. That's right. Okay, so here's this idea. You stop right there. Stop right there. Okay. I said don't hit him. Okay, get in the middle. There. So let's just pull the rope tight. Not super tight, because you're probably stronger than I am. So here's this idea. Here's this straight line of truth that C.S. Lewis, in a sense, pointed out. And he says, how do I know what's skewed unless I first know what this straight line is? Okay? And so, Marky, you're going to come and help me now up here. Yeah. I just need you to hold this, because I'm going to have to go back here and do some things, okay? So here's this idea. But this is where we as a culture, this is what we do, all right? And this is what you're going to see this morning that we do. Now, you can't hold it too tight here because of what I'm going to do.
Okay?
You're going to be flexible and work with me.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So what we're going to do is I'm going to come back here, and I'm going to, first of all, I'm going to take this rope, and I'm going to let Chris Labor hold a section. Because here's what happened is there's this belief that I know, here's what I think. I think it's okay sometimes for me to get angry because my kids were bad. Not that your kids were ever bad. I am not saying that, Chris, so don't misunderstand what I am saying there, okay? So here's this reality. I just want you to grasp with me. I know I'm in a bad spot. Just hang with the sound. We'll try to do the best we can. So Chris is holding out because I am justified in getting angry with my kids and mistreating them because they were bad and they deserve to be that way, okay? So she's, in a sense, what she's done is she's pulled that line of truth to kind of conform to what she's at. You follow? Okay, well, Steve, you're not out of the woods here yet either. Just hold on to that there, okay? Because Steve here, he likes to drive a little bit quick, okay? He's got this is not true for Steve. I've made this up, so do not take this as being true, okay? I'm sure this is not true whatsoever. But Steve likes to drive, you know, with a little bit of what's been known as a lead foot, okay? It's probably from all the, working at Walmart and such, and they have so much, you know, ammunition and stuff like that, it kind of got stuck to his feet when he was walking across it, and it's just going to be foot heavy. Something along those lines. I know, I was really stretching it there. Okay, but here's Joetta, and she feels that it is wrong to ever show any signs of weakness, okay? And so Joetta here, basically, she says, no, it's wrong. It's almost a sin to show any kind of weakness, and so she's going to kind of hold the rope there, if you will, all right? Kind of conform to this idea of what is right and wrong. Okay, you ready for this? All right, there we go. All right, now here's the thing. You know, with Denny, and again, I'm making these things up, so please don't go home and be mad at me. Don't send me emails that's like, you totally misrepresented me. I know I did. Okay, I totally realized that I did that. But here's this reality, and somewhere in our culture, in our past, we have a reputation as Christians. Remember that whole crusade thing? Where when you don't follow Christ, tell you what we'll do is we'll end your life. It's like, it's either follow Jesus or die, and that's not... And that was viewed as truth. That was viewed as good. And so in a sense, we kind of pull to that and we kind of hold to that. And that was never the intention. And likewise, here's Frank. Thank you, Frank. I would have had Aiden, but he's not sitting with you. I don't know what that means. You know, he kind of built you guys up. He slammed you down and then he went and sat in the corner. That's pretty much what happened, right? Am I right? That's right. So here's this other reality that we look at. You know, sometimes I like to share some gossip as a prayer request. You know, I'm gonna talk about this person. I'm gonna talk about them negatively. You know, but it's okay. It's okay because really I'm just sharing it as a prayer request, and really it can be extremely hurtful. And sometimes that stuff happens. And here's Tim. All right. And Tim doesn't necessarily, you know, obviously do this either. But there's this reality that sometimes we like to hold on to certain things, even though they're not necessarily true. And so, in this case, sometimes I'll criticize people. You know, I mean, I justify that idea of criticizing people, you know, because they need to learn a lesson. I need to teach them something from my criticism. And so this is the idea, and this is what we're left with. Okay? God has given us this idea, this straight line of truth, but what we do is we grab hold of that rope, if you will. We grab hold of that truth, and I don't want to conform myself. I don't want to allow myself to be conformed to that truth. So instead what I do is I grab it and I kind of pull to where I want that to be true. Does that make sense? And I think we do that as a culture. I think we do that as a church broad spectrum. But we're going to see that this morning. That's exactly what happened. And I just want us to grasp this reality. And looking at who we are, holy smokes, I'm almost out of time. I haven't gotten anywhere. Okay. That's bad news. Everyone is just like, seriously? How much longer is this going to be? Anyway, so let go of the rope, let's collect this, and we can move on. But here's this idea. I want you to remember this idea of what's going on with this idea of a straight line where God leads us to this truth. He lays it out for us. He shows us what this truth is. But we have this habit, if you will, of wanting to take that truth that God has laid out for us and conform it to what I want that truth to be. And it's called in the sense that justification. Do you follow? And so here's what we're going to do. And we're going to shift gears here and go not super quick, but I want you to see what happens in this story. So to bring you up to speed, if you're just joining us, we've been going through the Gospel of John. I know you're saying, what? It was just your introduction? I know. It's okay. It'll be fun, okay? We're okay. I'm just telling you to think that about me right now. Okay, so here's this introduction in the sense where Jesus has been arrested. All right, we saw that a couple weeks ago. We looked at Peter, how Peter had denied Christ and how he wasn't following Christ closely. But now we're getting back to it. So we have these things happening kind of simultaneously in this scripture. We're looking through the Gospel of John chapter 18 specifically. We'll also be talking about Matthew 26. I have almost all the scriptures up here this morning. But as we look at it now, look at this kangaroo court that happens to Jesus who has been arrested. All right, and there's some laws that were broken in the midst of it. Incidentally, I was wrong last week. Okay, several of you corrected me. I said that the wheat goes in this end. That was wrong. The wheat goes in this end. I was right about this two things. One, I was right about the chute actually transports grain. And number two that I was right about, as you find these all over in the fields in the Midwest. Okay, that's all I was right about. Okay, so here we go. John chapter 18, starting at verse 12. So this is where there's six trials. These first three trials happen with the Jewish leaders. The first one, so Jesus is arrested. He's taken to Annas. Annas is, in a sense, the high priest, though he's not technically the high priest. So here's how it worked. Annas was the high priest in roughly 6 to 15 A.D., all right, for about whatever that turns out, 9 years or so, from the age of like 37 to 46, Annas was the high priest. But what was happening in Jewish people were under Roman law, Roman control. And so what ended up happening is Annas was appointed as the high priest in that time period, and he was for the most part the oldest. He was also seen by the Jews as continuing to be, in a sense, the legitimate high priest. However, the Romans, after a certain number of years, would kind of say, you know, your time is done. We want a new guy. And I believe for some of those reasons would have been to kind of keep the Jewish people, in a sense, not locking into someone who would then develop too much power. You follow? And so what would happen then is, so they went up to Annas and said, Annas, you got any sons? He said, yep, I got five sons. And so one at a time, each of those sons became a high priest for a while. And then they got to the point of he had no more sons. He said, but I do have a son-in-law, and that's Caiaphas. And we'll look at Caiaphas here in a little bit. Caiaphas was the technical high priest at the time, but to the Jews, Annas was still viewed as the high priest. So it gives you a little context. So then this detachment of soldiers, remember there are 600 Roman soldiers with its commander, and then we talk about the Jewish officials, arrested Jesus, they bound him, okay, they tied him up, they hauled him away, and they brought him first to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas. So he was viewed as the high priest, but he's not technically the high priest. Caiaphas was technically the high priest, appointed by the Romans. And just as a reminder, Caiaphas was the one who advised the Jewish leaders that it would be good for one man to die for all the people. That prophecy that he said to Jesus, that nobody's like, Caiaphas had no idea that he was prophesying. And what we're going to see is like, what an amazing thing, how God is sovereign, even in the midst of those realities where people had no idea what was going on. And so here it is. We find Jesus in front of Annas. Now watch what happens here. So meanwhile, okay, this is the meanwhile because John and his gospel had just flipped back to Peter and his denial. Okay, so Jesus was taken to Annas. We talk a little bit about Peter and his denials. Now we're coming back. Meanwhile at the ranch, the high priest, who is Annas, is questioning Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. And he says to Annas, I have spoken openly to the world, Jesus replied. So Annas comes in, he starts questioning him. Tell me, Jesus, in a sense, about this teaching that you've been doing with your disciples, because I think it's wrong and we'd like you to admit it, in a nutshell. And Jesus says, I have spoken openly to the world, Jesus replied. I always taught in synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews come together. I love this. I said nothing in secret. We'll see evidence of that in just a moment. I said nothing in secret. All my teaching was public. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said. And Jesus is doing this for a very specific reason. We'll talk about it in just a moment. Unless, of course, I forget because I'm rushed. When Jesus said this, one of the officials slapped him in the face. And he says, is this the way you answer the high priest? He demanded. If I said something wrong, Jesus replied, testify to what it was, what it is that I said wrong. But if I spoke the truth, why did you strike me? So in Luke, this is an example of these teachings that Jesus was saying that he was doing publicly. So every day he, this is Jesus, was teaching at the temple. But the chief priests and the teachers of the law and the leaders among the people were trying to kill him. So already Jesus wanted to be killed. This is, again, Luke 19 now. So it's kind of looking back at these other aspects. And yet they could not find any way to do it because all the people hung on his words. So let's look at this a little bit closer. The law was, in this Jewish context, is the defendant could not, like our Fifth Amendment, was not obligated to defend themselves. In other words, you could ask them questions they did not have to answer. They did not have to basically prove their own innocence or prove their own guilt. They would bring in witnesses. And so what is happening here with Annas asking Jesus and questioning Jesus, it's against the law to do exactly what he's doing. And here Annas is, and he's doing it. And this is early in the morning. There's other issues with that too. We'll talk about that in a little bit again, unless I forget. But he says, Jesus says, why question me? In other words, what Jesus is really saying is, don't you realize, he's calling him on it. Why are you questioning me? Okay? What you're doing is illegal, and yet you're doing it and pretending like it's okay and good. What you're doing is grabbing, in a sense, on that rope, and you're pulling it away from the truth that you guys claim to be following, and you're skewing it, and you're making it a bent law, if you will. You're not holding to the truth that you even claim to be holding to. You're grabbing that rope, and you're pulling it. So why are you questioning me? And then he says this, and this is really in your face. Ask those who heard me. In other words, he's saying, where are your witnesses? It's really, in a nutshell, what Jesus is saying is, where are your witnesses? And the guy who says, he acknowledges what Jesus is really saying, and so he strikes Jesus, he hits him, and says, is that how you talk to the high priest? Do you catch the irony how the true high priest is just hit for holding to the truth when the earthly high priest is breaking the law to hold on to what he wants to be true? He's willing to bend the truth to hold on what he wants to be true. That's kind of a big deal. And he says, Jesus says, ask those who saw me. Ask those who heard my teaching. You don't have to hear it from me. Go ask the ones, in other words, you saw in the previous verse, ask the ones that you're afraid of. Because you know if you bring those witnesses in here, they're going to be testifying a whole different way than you what you want them to be. You want things to be true the way you want them to be true. You don't care about what's really true. You want to grab that rope and you want to pull it to conform to yourself. And what are you left with? It's not a straight line of truth. It's something that conforms to the way we want it. So then it goes on. And in this sequence, there was actually a number of laws that are being broken. And we see some of them exemplified in this passage. For instance, I just mentioned this idea of a person is not obligated to testify against themselves. That's the first law. There was no charges brought when Jesus was brought to Annas. He was arrested. There were no charges. They didn't tell him why he was being charged. No charges were read. That was also another law. So none of these things are happening because the bottom line is they didn't know why they arrested him. They knew they wanted him out of the picture, but they had no charges to bring up against Jesus. So number one is they're asking him, in other words, Jesus, tell us what you taught the disciples. We want to find something that you did. So say something that's kind of self-incriminating so we have something to grasp onto so that we can get rid of you, is really what they're saying. No charges when he was arrested. None. There were no witnesses present. We talked about that. There was no evidence present as to that he had done anything wrong whatsoever. And it was also illegal to strike a person who had not been convicted of the wrongdoing. There was no, you were not allowed to bring and institute punishment when you were not yet convicted. And so that even striking Jesus was also an illegal thing that took place. Five things just in this first moment of the trials. And so after this, what ends up happening is, so then Annas basically is getting nowhere. He wanted Jesus to incriminate himself, has not happened, so they're going to send him off to Caiaphas. Caiaphas, the technical high priest at the time. So send him off to Caiaphas, see what Caiaphas can do, because I'm not really getting anywhere, is really in the nutshell what's happened. So we're going to flip to Matthew chapter 26, because this has the account of Jesus with Caiaphas. So verse 57 says, those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. We'll go one more here. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death. And so it's not just the fact that we're not looking for something that Jesus did wrong. Hey, he stole some bread, because that doesn't warrant death. They want death. They want Jesus out of the picture. So the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin comprised of 70 people, okay, 70 men. They were, some were Pharisees, some were Sadducees, and some were other just teachers of the Jewish law. And so you have these leaders, 70 of them, that would come together. Now, in order to do what they did, they needed only 25. 25 people were required for a quorum. And so I believe that as they went to Caiaphas, they had not yet assembled their quorum, if you will. They did not have their 25 represented. It says here a whole Sanhedrin, but if you look carefully, what the language is saying is the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin as a whole, was looking for a way to get rid of Jesus. And I'm convinced that not the whole Sanhedrin wanted Jesus out, and I don't believe that a whole Sanhedrin was there when this happened. I don't think they could have assembled all 70 at that moment. So they're looking for false evidence that they could put Jesus to death, but they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. And so you have these people coming forward, false testimonies even. And even in the false testimonies, they could not find reason to convict Jesus of wrongdoing and put him to death. Nothing was there. Finally, two men came forward, and they declared, "This fellow, I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days," which is not a cause for death. Okay, these are these false accusations coming up. And Jesus did say something like, "You guys destroy this temple, I will raise it up in 3 days," talking about himself. And they're pointing at that. He said, he's threatening to destroy the temple. Well, again, that's not exactly what he said. So they're still looking for false accusations here. Still grabbing that rope, looking for something that would conform to their belief. And their belief is that Jesus is not who he says he is. It cannot be that way. Grab the rope. Let's get that rope over here so I can have my truth. And we can get rid of Jesus. And I don't have to conform to the truth that Jesus is laying out for me. Do you follow that? Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you going to answer?" Again, Jesus doesn't need to answer. Right? What they're doing here is still wrong. You can't do that. Shame on you. Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing to you? In other words, I still have nothing, Jesus. I'm looking for something here. These guys said you're going to destroy the temple and you have nothing to say. Give me something so that I can actually continue on with this, because it is between 1:30 and 3 a.m. at this point. They got to hurry, because if this gets to be daytime and all these people that were doing that triumphal entry see what's going on here with this Jesus, they're going to have a little bit of an issue to deal with come morning. All right, and there's another issue too, and we'll talk about that in a moment here as well. So what is this testimony? Tell us, Jesus. But Jesus remains silent. He didn't say anything, didn't give them what they were looking for. But then he blows your mind with this. Watch this. The high priest said to him, "I charge you," and he can't do this. This is wrong. This is illegal. "I charge you under the oath of the living God." He does not have to do this. But basically what this Caiaphas is saying is, tell us clearly now. Tell us the truth. You're under oath. You cannot lie to us. Tell us the truth in this matter. Tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God. In other words, he's put Jesus under oath. Jesus, tell us the truth. Do not lie to us. Tell us exactly what the truth is. Tell us that straight line of truth that we may know the truth. And this is what Jesus says. We find the account in Mark 14. Jesus says, "I am." In other words, he says, "I'm God. And not only am I God," he says, "you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming in the clouds of heaven." They asked for the truth. He gave them the truth, the straight line. They said, "That doesn't fit. I can't handle the truth." And so they grab the rope, and it's like, that's not okay with me. I'm not willing to conform. I'm not willing to let that Holy Spirit move my heart to conform with the truth of Jesus Christ. Instead, I'll grab that rope and I'll keep it over here. And that's, in a sense, kind of what we deal with every day. Because somewhere along the lines, we know what's right and we know what's wrong in a lot of cases. And instead, what we do is we grab that rope. "Jesus, I know you want to transform me right now. I know you want to do a change in me, but I'm not okay aligning myself with your truth. Instead, I'd rather do this, because this is easier and this is more comfortable." And that's what we do. And now suddenly we can look at these Jewish leaders maybe with a different perspective, because it's easy to look at them and say, "I'm not that bad." It's easy to look at them and say, "Oh, they were so dumb. They're so ignorant." I am ignorant and I am dumb sometimes when I look at trying to conform Jesus' truth to me, as opposed to allowing myself to be conformed to his truth. And I don't think I'm the only one. They look at this, what Jesus said. They asked for the truth. He got the truth, and they couldn't handle the truth. And he said, then the high priest tore his clothes and said, he has spoken blasphemy. In other words, Jesus, you can't be who you say you are. You can't be that way. You have to conform somewhere to what we believe. Why do we need to hear any more witnesses, lest some other witnesses speak the truth and we find ourselves really in some hot water? Look now, you have heard blasphemy. What do you think? He asked this to the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin who were there, which is up to 25 or at least 25 people. Well, I take it back. I'm thinking, give me a moment. This is still with Caiaphas. They say he is worthy of death, but they don't have their quorum yet, I don't believe. So they spit in his face. They struck him with their fists. Others slapped him and said, prophesy to us, Messiah, who hit you? Total insult upon insult to the high priest, the true high priest, by these earthly high priests and their servants. And this is the third trial. And so what ends up happening is, basically the Sanhedrin, for the most part, has convicted him, but it's not official. And there's a couple of reasons why it's not official. It could be, number one, that they didn't have a quorum yet. They may have had a quorum by this time. We saw that previous verse. However, the Sanhedrin cannot do what they're doing at night. Law number 6 that's being broken. They can't do that at night. That is against their own law, and yet they're doing it. And so in order to pacify that, what they do is they wait till daybreak. And at daybreak in, now they can do it. Technically, once someone is arrested, they had to wait 24 hours before they could even be brought to trial and be convicted. They waited about 2 hours. And I'm sure they're, again, justifying it, grabbing that rope and pulling off to their side, saying, well, technically that was the previous day because daybreak hadn't started yet. You follow? You know, that was yesterday. It was 2 hours ago, but it was just yesterday because we didn't have daybreak. And now all of a sudden we got daybreak, and now we can form the Sanhedrin. So at daybreak, the council, the Sanhedrin of the elders of the people, both the chief priests and the teachers of the law met together, and Jesus was led before them. So this is that third trial where basically now it's going to be official. Jesus was probably put into a prison for a cell of some form for several hours. And they say this now again. We want this confirmed. We're daylight now. So now we're actually operating legal. Okay, finally, kind of. Says, if you are the Messiah, then tell us. And Jesus doesn't admit to it, but look at what he says. If I tell you, you would not believe me. You asked for the truth yesterday, a couple hours ago. I gave you the truth, and you didn't believe it. You wanted to put me to death. So if I tell you the truth, you will not believe it. And if I asked you, you would not answer. In other words, we flipped this, okay, and you were the ones on trial, and I asked you, you wouldn't answer because it would incriminate yourself. Hello, remember these laws of yours? But from now on, and this is where he lays it out, from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the mighty God. In other words, I know what's going on. I am totally in control of it. And you guys are basically playing right into my hands. Ha, ha, ha. I'm going to save the world through you, and you're clueless. Because all you're stuck on is grabbing that rope, pulling it so that it aligns with your truth in the way you want your truth to be. They all asked, are you then the Son of God? And again, he replied, You say that I am. In other words, you know, okay, so he's not really answering. He's not saying I am anymore. He says, you say that I am. That's why you want to kill me, because you're saying that I said that I am. Follow that? You said that she said that I said that I am. Then they said, why do we need any more testimony? We have heard it from his own lips. Then the whole assembly rose and led him off to Pilate. And we'll be looking more at those trials with Pilate next week. But I want us to wrap it up and look at this idea. I understand, and we look at this, and we can very easy to separate myself from these teachers of the law because they seemed so skewed. They seemed like they were just so set on grabbing that rope and holding that truth to be right where they wanted it to be. But we do that same type of stuff. You know, maybe not to that point of where we're killing people. No, but there's something bigger going on here. And this is where Jesus was there, and he wanted transformation from these Jewish leaders. And we saw some transformation with those Jewish leaders. You saw it in Nicodemus, I'm convinced. Nicodemus went to Jesus. There was something stirring in him. He went to Jesus. Jesus kind of laid it out for him. We see other evidences of Nicodemus later kind of defending Jesus after that point. Where I think Nicodemus was like, I've held on to this rope over here for so long, and I was like, you know, I'm realizing that maybe what I believe is not really the truth, and I need to let go of the rope and see where that truth really is and be able then to align myself with that truth. Because here's the thing, you can hold on to that rope and you can believe whatever you want to believe and you can believe it wholeheartedly, but that doesn't make it right. You know, and there's this reality that what I believe and what you believe might be total opposites. You know, and we might both be wrong, but we can't both be right. You know, I know we're getting into that whole idea of absolute truth. I don't want to necessarily go down that road, but there is a reality that Jesus has given to us this line, this truth that we can look at. And that the job is, our job is to say, Holy Spirit, I don't want to align myself with that because I'm afraid of what that means for me. That means if I align with this truth that you have laid out for me, that means that maybe I have to change some things in my life and I would rather not have those things changed. And that's why I don't let go of the rope. And that's why I'd rather hold on to that rope right here because this is where it's comfortable. And I'm convinced that Jesus wants us to let go of the rope, look at my truth, it's good, trust me, and then say, okay, I'm scared to death right now because I don't know what following your truth is going to mean for me, but I'm going to do that. At least I'm going to try. And Lord, help me to stop. When I grab this rope and I try to justify my sin, when I try to justify what I'm doing, it's okay. I mean, it's okay once in a while. You know, I just took a little bit of money. You know, they have more than I do. You know, a little bit of that Robin Hood syndrome. They have more than I do. I really kind of need it. It's okay. They're not even going to miss it. You know, it's okay. And I'm not making a statement on speeding, but let's look at this bigger picture. You know, we justify sometimes in what we do. Everyone else drives 5 miles an hour at the speed limit. Everyone else drives 10 miles. So can I. I'm not bringing conviction for those who are driving over the speed limit, okay? Because I have to be looking in the mirror first and foremost, okay? But if we're going to call something true, I think we need to take an honest look at who's setting that line for truth and follow that line for truth. I'm going to invite Lane and the worship team up. I want you to reflect on your life. And is there ways that you're holding on to a truth that maybe the Lord is leading you to say, you know, I need you to trust me. I need you. Maybe it's even give your life over to him. It's like, Lord, I recognize that what you say is true. And I kind of heard how you say about yourself. And I kind of want to believe that you are who you say you are. But I don't know that I can really trust you in that sense. Lord, help me. Holy Spirit, help me to say, okay, I'm going to go with you on this. So reflect on that as we worship together.